Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another Ron Spomer Outdoors podcast. They tell me that we're going to specialize in 6.5 millimeter cartridges today for some odd reason. Probably because they're so popular and they're getting to be so many of them, and people just keep writing in with questions, especially about the 6.5 Creedmoor. And friends, we're going to cover what all of you have been asking and telling me, but we're also going to do a little bit of a special thing near the end here, and that is going to be we're giving away the trade secrets on how to make a million as an outdoor writer. Stay tuned. Let's start with the 6.5 questions, starting with one of our patrons, Paul. Mr. Spomer, I really enjoy your podcasts and videos. I listen to them each day while driving to work. Glad to hear from you, Paul. Recommendations. He's got a 4570, a Ruger American and 6.5 Creedmoor. Here we go. And a Weatherby Vanguard in a 308 Winchester and a Browning Abelt in a 7mm Remington Magnum. Paul, sounds to me like you are ready for just about anything here. I mostly hunt eastern whitetails and I punch holes in paper, but I am trying to get out west this year for a pronghorn hunt and eventually for elk, possibly a South African hunt in the next couple of years. Hey, I'm behind you on that one, Paul. Definitely recommend it. I know that the rifles I own will check most of the boxes, and while I don't need a new rifle, I'm hoping you could suggest a caliber to round out my lineup. Don't need it, but might want one, huh? I promise I won't tell my wife it's your fault when I make the purchase. Oh boy, I'm getting in trouble here. Thanks for the entertainment and information, Paul. Oh boy, Paul. Yeah, you really do have the waterfront covered pretty much here. Gosh, that 308 Winchester and the 7mm Remington Magnum, they pretty much do everything and everything. You've got that 4570 for closer range, bigger stuff, bigger holes kind of a thing. And you've got it in a Henry Big Boy, so you ought to be able to get fairly high pressures in that. You don't have to settle for those wimpy ones that were going down to the handling the chamber pressures in the old trapdoor Springfield. But you're not quite up to the power levels you could get from a Ruger number one, which would get you up there closer to the 458 Win Mag category. But still, big, heavy bullet in that 4570, you're going to be able to handle even Buffalo in Africa. A lot of guys will take a 4570 over there for that in a lever action like yours. So, gosh, only thing left any bigger than that is a hippo and an elephant. They're not going to let you use that 45.7 on an elephant. So if you want to go elephant hunting, you're going to have to get at least a 375 H&H or a 416 or a 450 of some kind. But I don't know, do you really need it? Not too many of us go elephant hunting every year or even every lifetime. So you might be better off. Gosh, you've got the long reach stuff covered. You've got the medium range stuff. I think you're missing a 22. I think you need a 22 center fire. whether you hunt some of the smaller varmints or not, it's just fun to shoot steel and targets with it and inexpensive. I would recommend a 223 Remington. You know, as plain, ordinary, everyday as it is, there are just so many good options out there in rifles and in ammunition that I don't think you can go wrong. Get yourself a rifle with a wild chamber that has been tweaked just a little bit so that you can shoot 5.56 NATO or 223 Remington in the same rifle. And gosh, you're set for some really good target shooting, long range plinking and things with that 223, and you can take rock chucks and wood chucks and that sort of thing, coyote hunting and all that, and pretty inexpensively too. You don't use a lot of powder in those little 223s. So that's what I would recommend you roll with. Okay. Now, Adam. Adam is from Missouri, and he's thinning out his collection. Say it's not so, Adam. You're selling rifles. Oh my gosh. All right, he has three extra rifles, a Ruger American in 6.5 Creedmoor, a Hawa 1500 in 6.5 PRC, and a Savage 116 in 300 WSM. In your opinion, Ron, which caliber is most versatile for North American game? My issue is I've looked at both 6.5s, and I think that they're big enough to effectively take moose, elk, hogs, and mule deer or not. Then I look at the 300 and I think maybe it's overkill for whitetails and pronghorns. What do you think? Also, I thoroughly believe that the 300 WSM, even though right now ammo is a little hard to find, is here to stay. And I'm not 100% sold on the 6.5s. Do you think they are here to stay or will they eventually fade away? I can guarantee you that it will all eventually fade away. Just ask the Brontosaurus. Everything eventually fades away. And there are so many cartridges from the old days that are faded away so long ago that we don't even remember most of them. And so it's nothing new to get all these new cartridges that fade away after 10 years or 20 years or sometimes even 5 years, because it's been going on ever since the 1860s. So, well, I don't know, guys, when I come up with this, is this cartridge going to make it or not? I tend to go, do I like what this cartridge does? Would I enjoy hunting with it, shooting targets with it, whatever it is I hope to accomplish with the darn thing? And then I hand load and don't worry about whether it fades out. Or I just find what load it likes and buy a lifetime supply of the stuff. Solved. Because everything's eventually going to go gone, bye-bye. But there are plenty of small firms out there that load obscure ammunition. You can get almost anything custom loaded for you. Yeah, it's going to cost a little more money because you don't have the volume sales and all, but it's never completely shut down. We made it once, we can make it again. And there are lots of small firms, like I say, who are loading some of that stuff. So I would just choose any of those that you like. I think the 6.5 Creedmoor is going to hang around. There's just so many of them that have been built and sold already that I think it's pretty much grounded, just like that 300 WSM. And that one stands as a great all-around cartridge. You think if the 30-06 is an extremely versatile cartridge, why wouldn't a 300 WSM be? It's shooting the same bullets. It's in a short action, which some people think is really wonderful. And it does almost the same thing as the 300 Win Mag does. And that's a world beater right there. So is it a little much for whitetails and pronghorns? Yeah, I shot it at a pronghorn once and there was quite a bit of meat waste, but then I didn't exactly slip it behind the shoulder through the heart and lungs where it would have done minimal damage. So that was kind of my fault, guys. But I don't know. I think if I were you, I'd get rid of that. I hate to say it, but the 6.5 PRC, because I have a couple of them and I think it's a great little cartridge, but that's one that I just can't guarantee is going to stay around. I like to think it will, but who knows? All right, good question, Adam, and good luck there deciding which one to winnow from the field. Let's go to Canada, where Ryan is asking us about, another Creedmoor and PRC question. Been shooting the Creedmoor for years, but I need to replace my deer rifle. I worry that the PRC is just another fad that will fade away. What are your thoughts? Well, I just told you what my thoughts were on that PRC. I do think it's a great cartridge. It does just about what the 270 Winchester does. Look how long that thing's been around. But yeah, with these new cartridges, everybody's coming out with new stuff. It's going to be competing a fair amount with obviously the Creedmoor, although it's like 200 feet per second faster, so it shouldn't be that much of a contest. But then you've got that 6.5 by 300 Weatherby. If you don't mind a long action, 30-06 length action, you've got that one, which is right up there or faster. So that's a viable alternative. And yeah, I don't know what to tell you. 6.8 Western in a 270, you can go that route too. You're going to have to make up your mind on that one, Ryan.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
How about Alex? You got anything fresh here? Another Canadian. This guy's from British Columbia. Gosh, I love British Columbia. What a beautiful chunk of North America. Mountains and rivers and it gets pretty far north. It is really fun up there. What does Alex have to say? Just recently started hunting. Well, good. Welcome to the fold here, buddy. And reloading. Wow, you're really getting into it. He's only gone after small game and deer so far. So he has a 22 long rifle and a 6.5 Creedmoor. Told you it was popular. A friend has invited me to travel to his part of the provinces on an elk hunt. Do you think my 6.5 Creedmoor is big enough for elk? And do you have any suggestions on bullet choices? Wow. Keep up the great content. Yeah, Alex, a lot of people insist that that 6.5 Creedmoor is not good for elk, but I just know too many guys who use it successfully and routinely successfully, not a fluke. So I think it's proven itself, and it's proven itself in other formats. Same bullet, 6.5, 0.264 inch diameter bullet in the 6.5 by 55 Swede. All the old timers like to draw, pull that one up and say, oh, are you kidding me? We've got it. Who needs a Creedmoor? We've got the Swede. It's been around since the 1890s. Come on. It can do anything. It takes caribou and it takes moose and it's taken big brown bears in Europe and all sorts of stuff. Well, if that's the case, the Creedmoor can pretty much do the same thing. But it's not optimum for elk. So do choose your bullet well and park it in the right place. I would say go for your broadside through and through chest shots if you can get them. Don't be taking these angled shots. You know, if you really know what you're doing, you can do a bit of a quartering angle, get it behind the shoulder, slip it up in there, aiming for the off shoulder and pick up both lungs and go over the heart and all. But you get too much of an angle on it, and where you need more penetration, you just might not get it. But in general, these 6.5 Creedmoors have been doing elk just fine. I would go with the heavier bullets, 140 to 143. You might even go to the 147s and such, but your velocity is going to go down. And if you want to maintain a little bit of a flatter trajectory, you probably stick with a little bit lighter bullet. I would look at some of the coppers for the penetration. You know, elk, big, thick, muscular animals, and penetration can be an issue. So go for either some kind of a bonded, controlled expansion lead core bullet or the all copper expanding bullets. I've had great luck with those, but plenty of people have had great luck with the others. So, and I can't suggest the powder charge amounts. Go to your hand loading manuals for that information. I don't want to risk getting something wrong or having it mistranslated and all the rest of it. So go to those proven recipe books and you will find what works well for you and your rifle. Just work your way up in your pressure so you don't overpressure anything. And I think you're going to do fine. And if you don't mind, Alex, if you get a shot at an elk and all, just let us know next year, right back in and tell us how it all went and how that 6.5 performed if you indeed use it. Good luck. Chad is from Idaho. Might be my neighbor. I have two female friends. Well, good for you, Chad. I used to have a couple too, but now I have one. I have two female friends who want to go elk hunting this year. They've both hunted deer before, and they both shoot a 243 Winchester. One is more recoil sensitive than the other. Would I be better off to recommend a 7mm 08 Remington or a 6.5 Creedmoor for them? I told them that if they want to go elk hunting, they're going to have to step up from that 243. Okay. Yeah, Chad, I think you're on the right track here. Now, there are plenty of people who take elk successfully with a 243. I've told this story a million times. I'll tell it another. One guy took 13 bulls with 13 shots, but he put them just in the right place. And I suspect he was within 100 yards or so. But you know elk. You see a big bull and he's not in the perfect position and he's not the right distance and you want to shoot and you, oh my gosh, I think I'll risk it. And then you might be in trouble. So yes, I would say definitely go heavier than that. And I would have to go with the 708 for my choice. A little bit more recoil, but it gives you the option if you can learn to take the recoil. And I think almost anyone can. Not that much in a 708 Remington. But you have the option of going to heavier and heavier bullets all the way up to 175 grain. And as most of us have heard, the 757 Mauser, real close in performance to the 708 Remington, with 173 grain bullets, has been taking elephants in Africa, or used to at the turn of the 20th century when the ivory hunters were at work. They would take buffalo and elephant and all the biggest animals in Africa with these 757 Mausers, shooting 2,300 or so feet per second with 173 grain bullets. So more than enough proven ability to penetrate deeply and take big animals. So for elk, I think you're right on with that 7mm 08. There you go. Never mind what I said earlier about the 6.5 Creedmoors and elk. They just got upstaged. And we're going to go to Louisiana with Brian. He won something, a Frankie Momentum in 6.5 Creedmoor. Wow, good for you, buddy. Won it at a Whitetails Unlimited banquet. He's a 100% disabled veteran, weighs 140 pounds. He's, oh my gosh, survived cancer twice, open heart surgery. Lighter recoil is a plus, he says. I should say so. Power, more power to you. Tough guy to go through all of that and still be shooting. Way to go, man. Okay, my question involves sighting on a dead-on range. Most shots I take here in Louisiana are 100 yards or less. However, I sometimes sit in a good stand on a pipeline right away that offers much more range. So what range would you suggest to sight in on for a dead-on zero? Currently, it will shoot a nickel or even a dime-sized pattern at 100 yards, so it's an accurate rifle. I value your input greatly. 22 years of active duty has helped me learn to recognize an active duty to boot. You're my hero of the day, Brian. So glad to hear from you. So his final question, I guess, is what, given a choice, would I prefer the 308 in a Ruger American with 150 grain bullet or the 6.5 Creedmoor? I think he said Creedmoor, did he not? Yes, that's the one he won. Hmm. Boy, I think I'm going to go with the Creedmoor on this one. And most people know I don't like the 308 all that much, which is kind of silly because it's a great all-around cartridge. But if you're really wanting to reach out there, I think you're going to get a little more efficiency out of that Creedmoor with a heavier bullet just because of the higher BCs. It's going to be driving its 143-ish grain bullets a little bit slower than your 150s out of a 308, but you've got a bigger hole with the 308. A lot of people like to point that out, but I don't think on whitetails it really matters. I've taken plenty of them with 24 calibers and 22 calibers, and it really doesn't matter that much. When you hit them in the boiler room, you're going to do a fine job with it. You're going to have more recoil with that 308, though. So if you're recoil sensitive, I'm going to have to vote for your 6.5 Creedmoor on this one. Take that Frankie that you won at the Whitetails Unlimited banquet. Get that thing shooting as well as it does. When you said covering it with a nickel, you cut yourself a shooter there. Put those bullets right behind your shoulder, and I think you're going to do beautifully. Yeah, good luck to you, Brian. Let me know how you do. All right. Up in Alaska, we have Gary. He's been listening to my podcast and YouTube videos, spending many hours catching up. Great. All right. Here's his question. For medium to big game with a rifle like with a short barrel, 16 to 20 inch, would I prefer a 6.5 Creedmoor or the 308 Winchester? Getting right there with Brian here on answering those questions. Now, you're hunting in Alaska. Took a moose with his 338 Ruger Compact Magnum in a Ruger Hawkeye. That is a great rifle and a great little cartridge, too. Well, he thinks so, too. He says, what a great cartridge. I also have a target rifle in 6.5 Creedmoor. However, I want to start hunting black-tailed deer and caribou, and I want a small, light, and handy rifle that even my wife could use. So might consider hunting moose with it, with the right bullet, but I already own a 6.5 Creedmoor. I consider this round, but many local experts think that the 308 is the bare minimum for anything worth shooting here in Alaska. So with proper bullets and loads and ethical ranges, say 400 to maybe 500 yards, would you pick a 6.5 Creedmoor 308 Winchester? Oh my gosh. And it's going to be in a small, short action, short barreled compact rifle. Oh boy. Thanks, Ron. I look forward to more episodes. Gosh, yeah, you're welcome, Gary. I hope I can answer this for you. That's a tough one. I mean, you start cutting your barrel down, obviously you start losing velocity, and you're not exactly screaming with either one of these when you start. Now, what I like about the 308 Winchester, of course, is you can go to 165, 68 grain bullet and get a little more oomph in it for the closer range stuff. You could even step up to the 180 for this moose thing you're thinking about going after. But with caribou and black-tailed deer, especially caribou, you've got some longer reach issues going on. And while the 308 can certainly do it, that's kind of what the Creedmoor hangs its hat on with those high BC bullets. And I don't think a blacktail or a caribou is going to walk away from a 6.5 Creedmoor. No way. So I think you could easily do that one. But if you want that option for a heavier bullet later for a moose or some of the bear up there, your 308 Winchester would be a great choice. I'm coming down on a solid, guaranteed, right in the middle, vacillating center. Either one's going to work just fine for you. I wouldn't freak out about it, but I think your wife would enjoy shooting that light-kicking Creedmoor a little bit more. Not that the 308 kicks all that much, but there it is. Good luck to you. Now, we go way down to the hot country, quite about as far from Alaska as we can get and still be in the US of A. We're going to Florida. Curtis. Probably no shots over 150 yards down here. 6.5 Creedmoor or 6.5 Grendel. There we go. Step up to the big Grendel here. If you guys happen to be watching, here's the difference between the Grendel and the Creedmoor. Ooh, that Grendel is tiny. Not going very fast with that little baby. He wants it for hogs and white-tailed deer. 150 yards. God, you can go to either one. I wouldn't quibble. I mean, if you want some kind of a super short weight mini action rifle, Howa makes a great little mini action for this one. It's kind of fun. Super short stroke on their bolt action. And you can get it in your ARs. A lot of guys are loving that Grendel for that. And they're finding that it works quite well on feral hogs and you don't have monster deer down there. Either one will work. But if you want to run it in an AR, I would go with the Grendel for sure. And then there are also these heavy bullet suppressed loads a lot of guys like to shoot for feral pigs, especially in a bolt action, because you put a muzzle or a suppressor on the muzzle and you shoot that suppressed round, you don't get a crack from a sonic boom and you don't get much of a bang even from the muzzle because of that suppressor. And now you're able to go pig, 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 pig before they figure out what's going on. And you, when you're shooting pigs, the idea is to get those invasive species out of the fields, right? So the Grendel might be the trick for that, and you won't have any trouble reaching out for deer on that one. Ha, I just talked myself into the Grendel. How do you like that? Okay, who else do we have here? Quinn from Scotland. Ah, great. Somebody from the Emerald Isles next door neighbor. That's just about as emerald as Ireland, I think. Ron, I've recently discovered your channel and love it. Oh, great. Oh, I'm glad I picked this one up, Quinn. Thank you, sir. I'm a Canadian forester, but I'm now living in Scotland. Company I worked for found out that I used to hunt a fair bit back in Canada, so now they've asked me to take up deer control on the forestry sites. Can I come over and visit you? There's a lot of folks listening that want your job right now, Quinn. So Quinn goes on, I don't know how familiar you are with United Kingdom firearms laws, but I might only be granted one permit for one rifle. Oh, gosh. Am I glad I live in the US of A. I will be hunting large red deer as well as small roe deer, some fallow deer, occasionally a muntjac and a Chinese water deer. Those are even smaller. Although the red deer and the roe deer will be the most frequent. What cartridges would you recommend if I'm indeed limited to just one for a number of years at least? Ideally, 270 Winchester for the red deer, 243 Winchester for the roe deer, and maybe a 6.5 Creedmoor. Here we are again in the middle of the road. Any thoughts on this would be greatly appreciated. Thanks in advance. Yeah, Quinn. Well, you've got great choices right there in front of you. The 270 really could do everything. I mean, it's not so powerful that you're going to make your roe deer disappear in a puff. put it behind his shoulder and punch the lungs out, you'll do just fine in that 270. Winchester, of course, shoots remarkably flat. It's famous. It's beloved. It's, I think, highly available. 243, I've had great success with the 243 on our whitetail, pronghorn, and mule deer over here. And anything smaller obviously would work wonderfully well. So I think you could get by with that. I don't know how big your red deer are, but the only time I've hunted Scotland red deer, I didn't even shoot at one, but my wife did. And I was absolutely shocked at how small the body was on this. I don't suppose it was an old deer. It probably was only a three-year-old or something, but it wasn't as big as our mule deer. So I think your 243 would work just fine on that. But you nailed it with that 6.5 Creedmoor being a good middle-of-the-road option. You know, it's not quite a 270, but it's a little better than the 243. Doesn't shoot quite as flat, but it doesn't deflect as much in the wind, and there were pretty good winds when we were there, so you might want to consider that. Yeah. I think any way you want to roll on, it's going to be just fine. Your deer certainly aren't going to matter. All right. Now we're going to get a little closer to home, but still have a bit of a Canadian influence here in Nova Scotia. Sean Brown. Cubby, what are you doing? You want to come over and say hi to anybody? Come here. Come here. Jump up here and say hi to everybody. Come on up. Yeah. There's Cubby. If you're listening, you don't get to see my beautiful Cubby dog. But if you're watching, there she is, the old freckle-faced white dog. How you doing, girl? You making trouble for me? You're not supposed to be up here, you know. You always start whining and want to come up when I'm talking, don't you? Why don't you go downstairs for a while? Go on down, and we'll go for a walk down a driveway. We've got a long driveway. You'll love to walk. Oh, she knows that. The driveway's a mile long, so when we go for a driveway walk, we're taking a serious walk. All right, where were we? We're going to go to Nova Scotia. Okay, here's another guy whose wife is getting into shooting, and he's looking for a good rifle for her. So he says, having a hard time choosing a caliber. Ideally, I would be getting a 6.5 RPM, but I can't find one. Ah, in a Mark V Camilla Deluxe. That's a great Weatherby rifle designed for fitting women. The stock designs and everything, that's a nice option. But he can't find one, huh? So now he's choosing between a 6.5 Creedmoor and a 240 Weatherby. Mostly hunting deer, but her goal is to shoot an elk. So your 240 Weatherby is one of the fastest of the 24 calibers. So think 243 Winchester on steroids. The challenge with that is ammo, but I guess if you're a Weatherby fan, you're already aware of that. You just buy your Weatherby ammunition and you're fine. But it's not like you're going to go to any store that sells ammo and find a lot of 240 Weatherby stacked up. Whereas with Creedmoor, kind of like a 308 anymore, it's all over. So that makes that kind of an obvious choice. But if you are a Weatherby fan and you love their rifles and everything else, you want to get one, but you can't find it, I think you're going to have to go with the Creedmoor, because where else are you going to find a 240 Weatherby unless they're offering you that Mark V Camilla in the 240 Weatherby? Then go with it, but I'd get a stock of ammunition laid in on it. But I don't think, let me see, you're going to go for an elk with that? Yeah, as I said, a lot of guys have taken elk with 243s. They do it in Montana and Idaho every year. Place your shot properly, use the right bullet, and you can do it. And this one's going to be a couple of 100 feet per second faster. So I think I can give you the nod on that one. I wouldn't mind trying it myself, actually. So, yeah, there you go, Sean. I think if you pick your shots carefully, use that right bullet, that 243 Weatherby ought to do the job for you on an elk. Wouldn't be my first pick, but something different could be fun. Good luck to you. Now, here we have, Jason. Jason mostly hunts deer, shotgun only, but he's looking to start moose hunting and maybe going where he could use a rifle for deer hunting. Okay. Well, maybe even elk hunting. So it's got to be under a 30 caliber in my area for varmints too. Wow, he's got a lot of limitations from wherever. Oh, he's from Ontario. That's why he's got limitations. So he's looking at a short action Browning and a 270 WSM, or maybe even the 6.5. Didn't say which one, but he says short action, so it would be the PRC or the Creedmoor, most likely. Not too many guys think of the 260 Remington anymore, which is a shame. That's a great little cartridge. Outperforms the Creedmoor, by the way. Just not as common. So what do we recommend here? Oh, and he's a southpaw, so he's going to have even more challenges finding the bolt action rifle to fit him. Oh, man. 270 WSMs are not all that common anymore. Of course, Browning, Winchester chamber for them, and they've got some great rifles that shoot very well with that. I love that 270 WSM. I have taken a lot of game with it, including moose, over the years, so it can certainly do the job. But if you go with the 6.5, I think you're going to have an easier time finding some left-handed bold actions, especially in the Creedmoor. But then you don't have quite the power of the 270. And what did you say about a 30 caliber? Under a 30 caliber in his area. Well, that's weird. So, yeah. Under 30. Yeah, you're pretty much... look at some 7 millimeters. Don't overlook your 7 mm's because there are a lot of good choices in 7 millimeter. And you can get the short action ones. Well, so the 270 WSM short action is not really available anymore. That's a great one. But the SOM is a little more available. You can also go with a 7 millimeter 08, 757 Mauser. Go with a 280 Ackley Improved. A lot of great options in the 7s. That's what I would recommend you look at. I think you're going to find more rifles in left-handed actions in the 7mm calibers. Hate to drive you away from your 6.5s, but I think the 7 is a great option, and it's closer to 30 and a little bit better for elk and the bigger stuff like moose if you go for those eventually. That would be my recommendation. Try that one. How about Brody from Missouri? Hey, Ron, I love hearing all the knowledge you have to share about firearms and hunting. Well, the reason I do that, Brody, is because I want to get it all out there before I forget it. Let's see. What else does he say here? He says he has a passion for hunting that he shares with me. Well, if you love hunting, you got that one right. I'm having trouble deciding on a great whitetail cartridge that will punch through thick brush. I always recommend the 150 millimeter. My current rifle is a Marlin 336 3030 Winchester, but I was looking for other options. People I know use the 6.5 Creedmoor and some the 7 Rem Mag, and they brag about how flat shooting they are, which is always impressive when the average distance is 100, 150 yards. I'm being sarcastic, of course. What other cartridge options would you recommend for thick wooded areas, or should I stick with the tried and true 30-30? Yeah, you should stick with the tried and true 30-30, but not because it's a great brush buster. That is a myth. If you ever do experiments like so many of us have, shooting through brush with a 30-30 or a 35 Remington or a 6.5 Creedmoor or even a 22-250, you will find that none of them are good at plowing through brush. The 30-30 really does not have that heavy of a bullet that can just like a brick going through the brush to get there. All bullets are deflected by brush. Somebody did a study one time shooting through a bunch of brush with these different cartridges and found that the ones that deflected the least in the brush or were the better brush busters were the 22 center fires. And his projection was that the bullets were smaller, so they hit fewer branches. Sounds silly, but it might be true. I did some work with a 22-250 once shooting through a bunch of tangled branches, and I got there with those bullets most of the time. And I've seen big, 180 grain 30 from a WSM, 300 WSM, 180 grain bullet. And this guy had a limb about the size of my finger, maybe a little bit fatter. And that bullet deflected 3 feet, we measured. He was aiming at behind the shoulder on a buffalo, and he hit him in the neck close to the head. Killed him instantly, but that bullet landed sideways because it had been deflected by that one little limb the size of my finger. So the 30-30 is going to do the same thing. But that 336 lever action is a great woods gun. That's why I like it. Now, you could consider the 360 Remington. That's new. The Buckhammer, 360 Buckhammer. That's a 35 caliber, a little more powerful than the old 35 Remington. And a lot of the old guys love that 35 Remington as a brush buster. So you might want to consider that. You'd be shooting 200 grain bullets in that instead of the 170s and 150s in your 30-30. So there's an option, but I don't predict that that's going to get through the brush a lot better than the 30-30s. You could go to some big 45-70 if you wanted to. That would punch through a few more branches just because you've got a 400 grain bullet. You could even shoot a 500 if you wanted to. But again, they're going to deflect as well. So better to pick your shots and not worry about busting through the brush. But I think I know what you mean. You're just looking for a great cartridge for that 100 to 150 yards max reach. And if you can sneak by some branches with it, so much the better. I'm going to have to roll with that 45-70 if you really want to bust some. Good luck on that, Brody. This is Don. Ron, I'm interested to know how large of a difference that I have seen in case lengths. For instance, I own a Savage Axis 6.5 Creedmoor, and I shot Winchester deer season solid coppers in it. And after the fourth round, the fifth round wouldn't even let me close my bolt. And then the entire unspent round was stuck in the chamber. We eventually got the round out and measured the Winchester round and a Hornady Hunter precision round side by side. The Winchester was 3/1000 larger in case length. So my question is it normal for factory ammo to vary in case length that much? Or does this just mean my Savage can't shoot the Winchester solid coppers? Thanks for your hunting. I hope your hunting season is going well. All right. Hey, thanks, Don. Great question. Now, that something is not right there. That's for sure. Now, when cartridges are manufactured and accepted by SAMI, that's the industry's standardization organization, they say, okay, here's the new cartridges proposed by whomever. It is going to be this long and this fat and this tapered and have this degree of a shoulder and all the rest of it. Those numbers all have tolerance levels. So they have a kind of the standard number that we all hear of, like your base is supposed to be 0.473 inches in diameter on the rim. And the shoulder is supposed to be 30 degrees and all. Well, you could be off by 0.001 or 0.002 and sometimes even 0.003 under or over, plus or minus. Those are your tolerances. So it sounds to me like you probably got a cartridge that was at the max of the tolerance on case length. And it was combined with a chamber that was at minimum specs. So you had a stuck. Now, was it the case itself that you measured? You said it was just the case. Or did you mean the entire cartridge with the bullet, based bullet tip? Those can vary quite a bit based on the taper of the nose. So your bullet will slide into the barrel, into the bore, but not touch the rifling yet because it's long and skinny in the nose. But if it's more of a round nose bullet and it's seated out too far, it could jam into the rifling. I have had 30-06 cartridges from Winchester jam into a custom rifle that had a little bit too short of a throat, perhaps. So things like that can happen. Oh, I'm guessing that's what was going on. Now, if your actual case length was too much, that would suggest the neck and or the shoulder was too far forward. You got to measure from the base of the cartridge to the shoulder, and that is your datum line for head spacing. And if your shoulder is pushed too far forward, you either feel a real tight closing of your bolt or you can't close it at all because you can't quite squeeze that brass down to fit in. That would suggest your shoulder is a little bit too long, so it's out of spec there. The neck is too long. It could get jammed up into the throat where the lead starts to slide up into the area of the rifling. And that would tighten around the neck. That seems pretty extreme, but obviously that has to be within specs because we hand loaders, we get numbers in our books. So when our overall length of the case gets to be too far, that's the issue that is required to have trimming done to reduce the length so that that neck doesn't impinge in the chamber against the rifling, and then you get higher pressures, really high pressures, because you've essentially locked that neck closed around the bullet and it can't release it. Your pressures can really spike. So definitely don't shoot those that are jamming up in there until you figure out exactly why. Look on your bullet to see if there are any marks from the rifling. If you're jamming it into the rifling, there should be little marks on there. Generally, they're going to be 5. Most rifling these days, the twisting rifling is 5 grooves and lands, 5R rifling. So you should see 5 of them on there. And that would indicate that your bullet's too long and it needs to be seated further back into the case. Oh, yeah, get that all checked out. You don't want to be shooting rounds that have tension that should not be there. Okay. I think I've read this once before, George, so they may have pulled up a question that I read one other time, because not every day I get called Bob Ross. And I remember doing this. This gentleman says, I've been watching your YouTube for about a year now, and I liken you to the Bob Ross of firearms. You're relaxing. It's just nice to pull up a chair, tune in, and learn. Bob Ross, for those of you who don't catch the name, was a painter who had TV shows showing people how to paint. And I've seen him a couple of times. I never sat through the shows and all, but I guess he had a real comfortable demeanor that people like to listen to as he described how to paint landscape scenes and stuff. So I think this is a compliment. I'm going to take it as one, because a lot of people make jokes about Bob Ross. Maybe like he's Mr. Milk Toast or something. I hope that's not me, but heck, it could be. At any rate, George likes to listen to me, so there. What is your question here, George? On my last hunt, he says, I took a 40-yard shot at a 10-point buck with a 6.5 Creedmoor using a Remington Core-Lokt tipped factory bullet. I still have the sight picture in my head when I think about it. I was aiming to shoot for the top of the heart to ensure damage to the heart and lungs. After about 20 minutes, I went out from my stand to look for a blood trail. When I came to where he had been standing, I saw the tracks where he had run off, and it looked like he was favoring a front leg because there was a dig in the dirt every stride, but there wasn't any blood. My heart began to sink as I began to think I had not made an ethical shot. However, I followed the steps just a few more strides. I looked around a tree, and there he was, lying dead on the ground. Bingo. So what's the problem here, George? After field dressing him, I found that I had hit him right in the top of the heart, right where I wanted, but the bullet was a clean through and through and didn't appear to have expanded at all. Is there a better factory round for expansion to ensure more damage, or at least a blood trail? Thanks, George. George, this is great. I am glad you brought this up, because I hear from folks saying bullet X is no good because it punches right through and doesn't leave a blood trail or doesn't tear up enough tissue. And the next guy will say, bullet X is the absolute best for tearing them up and leaving a good blood trail. But bullet Y really sucks. And it's crazy because you think, okay, they're going to be talking about a controlled expansion bullet that doesn't open up enough, especially the coppers. Oh, they just punch through like a pencil. You got to use a Core-Lokt. And that is often the one that is raised as the best option for really doing what you wanted to do. And yet here you are finding that it didn't open up and tear up a lot of tissue like it's supposed to do. I would have said, get yourself a Core-Lokt and you'll have it solved. And now it's the wrong bullet. What I mean by all of this is that they can all mess up. It's like a lion or a wolf or any other predator. They are maximized for efficiency, and yet they strike out a lot of times. They make their best attempt, and even though they've got the fangs and the claws to do the job, they sometimes don't get it done. The same applies to our cartridges and our bullets. Everything looks like it should work like science, but it doesn't. And I think it's nature. Just why would that bullet not open one time and it would another? I mean, I've had these Remington Core-Lokts open too much sometimes, and I complained about it. Other times they work perfectly, and now you've got one that didn't open up, apparently. The other thing I would say is don't automatically assume it didn't open without some real thorough examination. And it sounds like you did. You said you field dressed him, so you should have seen what sort of tissue destruction. But I have often heard from folks who see the entrance hole and the exit hole, and they don't look much different in size, and then they jump to the conclusion that that bullet didn't open up. Whereas if they had gone inside, they might find that there's all kinds of damage from a bullet that did open up, and only a part of that bullet came out the small hole. Things like that can happen. So we really do need to do a lot of post-mortem investigation on these things before we call something as no good. I would say that Core-Lokt bullet has just got an excellent reputation for the shot you took and doing the job. And I don't expect every animal that I shoot in the heart to just collapse right there, running a short distance and falling dead behind a tree. Man, I would say that's perfect. I expect my animals to run when I shoot them, and I have shot them with just about everything in caliber size and velocity and bullet types and all the rest of it. And I have found the same things, George. There's just sometimes things happen. So give it another try. But if you do want to try a more frangible bullet, against the advice of a lot of experts over the years, I would say you could try a varmint bullet, a really explosive bullet. If you're careful about putting it right behind the shoulder, tight behind the shoulder, so you don't hit any major muscle groups or bones, it's going to get into the chest cavity and do that explosive damage that varmint bullets are famous for. And that can result in really quick demise. I've taken a lot of deer and it was like lights out with that. But you're probably not going to get much of a blood trail. You might get pretty good at the front, but they rarely, if ever, exit. But it is an option. A lot of folks say, don't ever do it because those bullets can explode and not get inside. And yes, that can happen, but I've seen it most of the times they do get inside and do a great job. But use them with caution. Be aware of what's going on. You've got to really place your shots precisely. All right, let's go to Arizona, dry desert country, and see what Jake has to say. Of course, he could be in northern Arizona where it's not a dry desert. You're up in the mountains and the pines. Howdy, Ron. I love the content. Keep it up. Well, great. Appreciate that, Jake. I will try my best. Recently, my wife of 10 years has expressed an interest in chasing elk. Well, I'm glad she's chasing elk instead of some other things she might chase. The problem is she is fairly recoil sensitive. I think I'm going to get her a 6.5 Creedmoor. I load it with all the copper bullet of 130 grains or so. Keep her shots within 300 yards. Any recommendations would be greatly appreciated. Stay healthy and safe and good hunting. Well, good hunting to you too, Jake, and to your wife with that Creedmoor. Yeah, I think you're on the right track here. 130 grain bullet. The Barnes, did you mention a Barnes bullet? Just said copper bullet. I've had experience with the Barnes, TSX, TTSX, LRX, and the Hammer Hunters. Take a lot of game with both of those. And boy, do they ever work. I love them both. So if you're going to be using those, I would stand behind that 130 grain on an elk with that. Yeah. Even if you don't slip it behind the shoulder and you hit the shoulder, that bullet is so tough and hard, it's going to get in there and do a lot of damage, even at Creedmoor velocities. Now, the some of the early X bullets had a fairly narrow cavity in the nose, and some folks complained that they didn't open up easily enough. They opened those, so you might want to double check, but they seem to have a much larger cavity in the nose now that should open. And that 6.5 Creedmoor, 130 grain bullet, you should be getting about 3,000 feet per second out of that, or 2,900 at least. And that is fast enough to keep your velocities up over 2,000 out to 300 yards. You might even get closer to 400 yards. And they always say that those bullets are kind of their lowest velocity, impact velocity for opening reliably, is at around 2,100, 2,200, 2,000 feet per second, somewhere in there. So you're going to get adequate expansion at those velocities on impact. So at the 300 yards, you should be up over 2,200, I would think. So I think you're going to do well with it. Check it out. Whether you're hand loading or using factory ammo, I don't know. But if you're getting somewhere in that 2,900 to 3,000 feet per second with that bullet, you should do just fine out to 230 yards. Good expansion. All right. Thank you, Jake. Hey, let's go to Nebraska, where Robert is bringing up something I was hoping someone would, which is the 260 Remington. He says, I love your shows. I watch them faithfully. In a recent podcast, The Beginning of the End, you speak of the love-hate relationship of the 6.5 Creedmoor and how hard it is to find 260 Remington rifles. My beginning of the end was turning a nice Browning rifle chambered in 6.5 Creedmoor into a 260 Rem. Actually improved yet. Wow. You're going whole hog here, Robert. I like it. I kept my nice rifle. I kept my 1-8 twist barrel, and I have a sweet shooting 260 Remington Ackley improved. This was a small project for my gunsmith and a relatively inexpensive upgrade. I absolutely love it. I thought I would share this, as I know, been there and done that with a lot of the Creedmoor standing dormant in the back of the safe. Breathe some new life into them. Turn them into a 260 AI. Thanks for what you do, Ron. Well, Robert, thank you for that. That was inspiring, and what a great idea. You just take that Little Creedmoor, I'm holding it up here for you guys who aren't watching. You can see that it is a little bit shorter than the 260. They're both based on the same head size and the rim size. And you just get in there and ream out your chamber to fit the 260. Go a little bit further and push that shoulder to 40 degrees, and you've got the Ackley Improved, so you've got even more powder in it. I'll bet he's probably getting 150 to 200 feet per second increased velocity over the Creedmoor. And he was able to use his old Creedmoor rifle, so he didn't have to buy a new rifle. He had the fast twist barrel. He can shoot the long bullets. Bingo! It's a super Creedmoor. Love it. Good thinking, Robert. Thanks for writing in on that one. Now, here's something my wife said. I need to answer this one from Duck Hunter. Duck Hunter says, I was just at the eye doctor today getting a small piece of metal removed from my eye. Ouch. It wasn't gun related, but this definitely reminds me, wear your safety glasses when you're shooting. Oh, I see what you're doing here. That explains why this is sitting down on the floor. My wife wants me to remember to tell you guys about our new sponsor, Shell Shock, which does hearing protection, muffs for your ears, which are working out just great, but they've got also protective shooting glasses, which I too often fail to wear. Now, these are not prescription. They don't have prescription yet. These are just standard. So all of you who do not need prescription glasses, get something like these Shell Shock polycarbonate shooting glasses that can withstand things like bits of metal kicking up and whatnot. Got to protect those eyeballs. We don't see very well. We don't hunt and shoot very well without seeing very well. So protect your eyes. If you want to check out our sponsor, Shell Shock, they've got pretty good little protective eyeglasses. I've tried them out when I was able to adjust my scope for my diopter needs and shoot on targets pretty well, but I wouldn't be able to use it for hunting. But we're happy to have Shell Shock as one of our sponsors on the show. We will be covering their ear hearing protection devices here too down the road. So thanks for that reminder. And a part of the reason that Duck Hunter sent this in, I'm sure, is because somebody else on one of my podcasts chewed me out for doing some shooting demonstrations without eye protection. And this is just another reminder for all of us. And it's a good one. I thank you guys for all those safety tips. Sometimes we just sort of forget about things because we do it so often. We just sort of, get old and cranky or something. Hey, I want to tell you guys about a sponsor, another sponsor of ours, Knives of Alaska. I am tickled to have these guys on board because I don't know if I can think of a cooler name for a knife company than Knives of Alaska. I mean, it just says hunting and wilderness and mountain men and all that. And they've got a good looking box, too, with some good woodsy colors on it. I like that. I just got this one from them to demonstrate as a sample. This is really cool. Two knives in one. I see a lot of guides up in Alaska doing this system. You've got your big knife and your small knife together, which covers the waterfront. So this, I think, is a great size. Is this the Surge? This is the Alpha Wolf. The Alpha Wolf, I think, is a great size for your general purpose skinning and gutting and all the rest of it. It's a little bit short for moose, but I have used it on elk-sized animals, and that's going to get most of the work done. But here is the kicker. Those of you who have done a bit of hunting or trapping really know how to appreciate a little cub knife like that. And they call this one the Cub Bear. But it's for working the fine detail stuff, especially when you're caping animals out. Get that fine little pointed blade on there, and you can get into the narrowest little spots and do precision work using your finger here under the bolster or over it and guide that in for all the tight spots. These are full tangs, so you're not going to have your handle ever breaking off the knife. The handles themselves are sort of a synthetic, hard, waterproof material with a little bit of stick to them so you don't slip. And you can slip on a lanyard if you want. There are plenty of guys, I included, who have lost knives over the years because we didn't remember to snap the sheath closed, perhaps. But if you've got a lanyard going onto your belt in addition, you're not going to lose that knife. So with a nice set like this, you might want to consider that. But hey, if you're looking for good knives, check out Knives of Alaska. They use fine, high-quality steels. I don't know exactly which ones they're using on this one, but I can tell you that it comes with this little note saying that there's a guarantee. What does it say? Our knives are guaranteed for life against defects and breakage under normal use. That sounds like a pretty good guarantee to me. So you guys might want to check out Knives of Alaska. Here is one that my wife said I have to address that doesn't cover a 6.5 Creedmoor, or from what I'm seeing, any other 6.5. Oh yeah, there's one mentioned down here, but this is what she wanted me to read. The question is about outdoor writing. How do you make $1 million as an outdoor writer? I don't think this guy's asking about $1 million, but I'm trying to be funny. The way to make $1 million as an outdoor writer is start with 2 million. And when you've got enough rejection slips and have sent enough pieces out that didn't sell, you'll have 1 million left. There you go. Now, let's get serious. Sam is asking about maybe becoming an outdoor writer. And oh, I see why my wife wants me to read this here. We're getting to the nitty gritty here. A year ago, Sam wrote, we brought our first child into the world, a son, healthy, beautiful. From the first time I laid my eyes on him, my life changed, bringing my laid-back, carefree life into chaos. My son is perfect. He's all a father could ask for, but his big blue eyes looking up at me at night when I put him down to bed makes me want to do more with my life. This is a life-changing experience, Sam. My baby boy puts my soul into turmoil. I'm thinking about how he's going to see me as he gets older. Gosh, I feel like Dr. Phil coming on here. All that I've said, I've wanted to be an outdoor writer. How does one overcome the imposter syndrome? I've been hunting and fishing my whole life, but I know there are men and women out there 100 times more qualified to write about these things than I am. So how do I look at a cartridge, say an old Lee Enfield 303 I just picked up, and write an article on it when I know that dozens have already been written, probably by men who actually used them in the trenches or something? Looking back through all of this, I guess the real encompassing question is, how did you gain the confidence and overcome the heavy, deep ocean-like pressure that keeps people from going after their dreams? Wow. Sam, you just dive in and do it. The sweet thing about outdoor writing is that nobody sees you screw up. And we all screw up. You might write some real garbage and send it into some magazine editor who doesn't know you from Adam's off ox. And all he knows is that here's some schmuck who can't write, and he throws it away. Nobody's embarrassing you. Go for it. That's all I did. I just sat down and wrote 5 stories. I've told this before, but it's pretty cool. I had been reading these outdoor magazines all my life, and I wanted to do this as well. And I think because I had hunted so hard and I felt it so passionately, as you apparently do, that I knew the magazines and the tone that they had, the kind of things that they covered and wrote about, and I felt them deeply. So I just combined the two, and I wrote for each magazine what I think would fit with their editor's preferences. And I wrote from the heart what I know, not what I wanted to pretend I knew, which back then was plenty. I mostly pretend that I knew more than I did. But if you stick with what you actually know, and you can somehow bring out the emotions and the passion so that it comes across as genuine, when people read it, they go, dang, I know what this guy's saying. I felt the same thing. You don't have to be some famous florid writer with extra fancy big words or anything. It just has to come from the heart. It has to be real. You don't want to be extra wordy and go on and on about it. If you can just describe the things that move you when you're out there, quite simply, like the smell of wood smoke filtering through the autumn leaves as you're walking home after a long, hard day, and that you don't have to describe, I felt like this. You just have to describe, I smelled the wood smoke as I was nearing home or camp or cabin. People know that. They've smelled it. They've been there, and they go, yeah, I know what he's saying. I love this stuff. That's all you need to do. Don't be afraid. There is absolutely no reason to feel this pressure to be an expert. You just be you. And if you've got the passion and you're genuine, it's going to work. Now, you might have to work on your syntax and your grammar to be an effective writer. We all had to do that. But the only way to do it is to get started. So for your sake, and for your family's sake, and for your son's sake, start writing. If it's your passion, you'll just keep at it, and you'll get better and better and better. And if you find some good editors the way I did when I was younger, they will take you under their wing if they see some potential. And they'll say, hey, I see a spark here. I think you could make this into a better article if you X this and added that and a few things. And pretty soon, you've learned the ropes, and you're cranking them out. And then you reach to the point where you can almost make a living. No, there are ways, and those who stick with it, even if you don't get rich doing it, you're just going to have a rich life doing it. And that, I think, is way more important. So thanks for writing in with that, Sam. I'm not even going to go to your 6-5 PRC question down here. I think I probably answered it in some of the other ones, or we'll get to the next time because there are a pile more on here that we didn't get to. So everybody, thanks so much for sending in your comments and your questions. We always appreciate it. Gives us something to ramble on about. If you're enjoying our shows, let us know. You can read this kind of stuff on ronspomeroutdoors.com. We've got blogs in there that go on and on and on, and quite a few videos as well. There's our SOTV, where we have all of our videos ad-free and a few that you don't see on the social media channels. And we've got a store on there where you can buy exciting things like my 7mm book and some of the knives and other tools that we talk about on our show. So we want to thank Knives of Alaska and Shell Shock for being sponsors of these podcasts. We really appreciate it, folks. And we hope that you listeners will give them a tumble, check out their websites and see what they've got to offer. In the meantime, we'll continue working here. You guys continue enjoying the good life out there, and check in again next week. Until then, hunt honest and shoot straight.